what are the factors that are associated with a better quality of life as a dog ages. People in different environments with different diets or different lifestyles or different social engagement age differently from other people. And so we have every reason to expect that we'll be able to discover those same things in dogs.
Alright guys, I am so excited for you to be listening to our podcast. Today I have a very special guest. I am here with Dr. Katie Creeby, who is the Chief Veterinary Officer for the Dog Aging Project. So I would love for you to introduce yourself and talk about your role with the Dog Aging Project.
Thanks. I'm really excited to talk about our project with your audience. So I'm Katie Creeby. I am a small animal veterinary internal medicine specialist. And so in my practice, I see dogs who have diseases associated with organ systems or infectious disease. And through that work, many of my patients are old dogs because it's older dogs who tend to have organ system disease as they age. So that is my clinical role. But in my research role, I'm the Chief Veterinary Officer for the Dog Aging Project, which I co-founded with my collaborators, Daniel Promislo and Matt Kaberline. Starting almost 15 years ago now, from inception to execution. And in this role, I supervise all of the interactions with the dogs and all of the owner collected or veterinarian reported data about our enrolled dogs all over the country.
Whoa, 15 years in the making is definitely a long time. So could you give us a little overview of how the Dog Aging Project works?
Yeah, so the Dog Aging Project is what we call a community science project, meaning that these are all privately owned dogs, and information about these dogs is voluntarily shared with the project by their owners. So owners of enrolled dogs answer extensive surveys and questionnaires about their dogs. When possible, they provide us with their dogs' veterinary records from their local veterinary practitioner. Some owners are invited to join additional parts of our study where they might submit biologic samples from their dogs. Those might be cheek swabs to get DNA, or they might be asked to go to their local veterinarian to have their veterinarian collect samples of blood and urine and feces and hair from their dogs and submit those to us. And what we are attempting to do is study typical dogs aging normally in their homes with their owners. So it's very important to us that these are privately owned dogs living in all of the different environments where dogs live, getting all the different kinds of food and exercise and social interactions and other pets in the household that American dogs get, so that we can understand what's happening for all types of dogs in all types of environments as they age normally.
So with this being said, what exactly are you hoping to learn from this research in particular?
So our objective is to identify the genetic and environmental determinants of healthy aging in dogs. So when we say genetic, of course, we all know what that means. But environmental for us includes not just air or soil or water, but all of the other parts of environment like diet and exercise and social environment that we believe are going to be associated with healthy aging in dogs. We know that this is true in people. People in different environments with different diets or different lifestyles or different social engagement age differently from other people. And so we have every reason to expect that we'll be able to discover those same things in dogs. Of course, what we really want to do is improve healthy aging in dogs and by extension, learn how we can leverage that to improve healthy aging in people. But before we can improve it, we first have to describe it. And right now we're at the stage of trying to understand what are the factors that are associated with a better quality of life as a dog ages and the factors that might be associated with a worse quality of life as a dog ages.
Okay, so with this that you mentioned about the genetic composition of the dogs, can you explain how you're using genetic mapping and this technology for people that might not be familiar with it?
Sure. So DNA is the genetic backbone of what we understand about how we inherit the types of structures and processes that our bodies execute. And so DNA exists in every cell. Not every piece of your DNA is active in every cell, and not every piece of your DNA is active at all times, but a copy of your entire DNA complement exists in every cell. And so we can easily obtain DNA samples from these dogs through a simple cheek swab at home. The samples undergo a process called sequencing, where we actually take apart the DNA molecule and use complicated chemical reaction in computers to figure out what the specific components of that DNA architecture are. And within the DNA, there are many active sections, many inactive sections, and some sections whose function is known, whereas other sections, the function is not known. But when we have the entire sequence for that dog depicted, we can then wait and see what happens as that dog ages, and then go back and say, well, from the beginning, we knew that the dog had this kind of genetic code. What were the consequences of that dog's lifestyle and other environmental inputs on that genetic code that led to the dog's outcome? The way that this works is because we have so many dogs enrolled. So we currently have over 44,000 dogs enrolled. Not all of those dogs have submitted a DNA sample, but in the coming year, we'll have close to 10,000 DNA samples. And so because we're doing this at such a large scale, we're going to be able to find associations between DNA elements and outcomes in dogs, even though they're living in all of these different environments.
Wow, that is such a great explanation. So with this, what has been the most surprising finding of your research thus far?
So many interesting things. And this was one of the questions that I was really intrigued by when you sent me the questions that we were going to talk about today. So first of all, we are still at the relatively early stages of our project. For us to truly understand the long-term consequences of aging in dogs, we need to study dogs for most of their lifespans. And dogs can live, on average, somewhere around 10 to 12 years. Our project's only been going on for 5. So we have many pieces of data we've collected, but we have dogs who are still experiencing their lives as they unfold. And so we haven't yet analyzed many dogs all the way through their lifespan. A few things that have been really, really interesting. First, I'm not surprised by this, but I am delighted. Dog owners are so excited to be a part of this project. They love sharing information about their dogs. We knew that this was going to be true, but they have exceeded even my expectations of how committed they would be and how excited they would be to share information about their dogs. Another thing that has been interesting is that we expected a diversity of types of feeding regimens for dogs, and we found that that was true. And one of the findings that has come out early in our work is that some owners only feed their dogs once a day. Some owners feed their dogs meals, but some owners choose to only feed once a day. And there are associations between feeding style and dog health that we didn't fully expect. So one of the things that we've shown is that people whose dogs are only fed once a day tend to have fewer medical problems than people whose dogs are fed more often. And the reason that this is interesting is it really helps us understand the difference between associations and causations. Because right now, the only thing we know is that both of these things are true. Dogs who are fed once a day and those dogs having fewer medical problems. But at this stage, we can't know which is the cause and which is the effect. And this is really, really interesting. It could be the case that feeding your dog once a day makes your dog healthier. But it could be the case that if your dog is healthy, you can feed it once a day, and that's really convenient. Right. If you think about a dog who might have a chronic illness, might need to take medications, you might need to feed that dog multiple meals a day to get him to take his medications. Or a dog who regularly has an upset stomach or has diarrhea problems, you might need to feed that dog multiple times a day to get him the possibility of getting enough calories in. And so I think that this is a really interesting finding because it helps us teach people about science. It helps us teach people about the difference between association, which is all we know right now. I don't know which is the cause and which is the effect, but over time we will know. Over time, it will become possible for us to know, is it the case that people who are feeding their dogs once daily have healthier dogs 10 years from now? Or is it the case that people with healthy dogs are feeding their dogs once daily 5 years from now? And so it's a really interesting example of how the science unfolds.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think it is very interesting to see and explain science from this point of view, and especially with a topic that is so relevant to everyone because everybody loves their dogs and they're their fur babies. Do you think it has anything to do with obesity like we see in humans?
Absolutely. So we are very interested in obesity in dogs, and we certainly have an increase in obesity in dogs over the past few decades, as we have had in people in this country, and probably has to do with ready access to food. And we all enjoy eating when there's food available. So
and treats.
And treats for dogs. And so I do think that we're very interested in the health consequences of obesity that dogs will experience. We know that some of them will be similar to what humans experience, but some might be different. It's also true that there's a lot of interest right now in people looking at different types of diet regimens, including intermittent fasting or total caloric restriction. And it's possible that once daily feeding strategies in dogs will turn out to have benefits like caloric restriction or intermittent fasting in people. We are at very early stages of the research for both dogs and people about those dietary strategies. But one of the great things about our project is we're going to be capable of figuring it out with dogs faster because their average lifespans are so much shorter. And so for a person to understand the lifetime benefit of something like intermittent fasting or intentional caloric restriction, you would have to wait 30 or 40 years to figure that out. And in dogs, we'll probably be able to figure that out in 10 years or so.
Yeah, that is so great that you mentioned it, because this is where I was going with my next question. How do you think your research will apply to human medicine and gerontology in general?
Yeah, great question. So, of course, we're very interested in that, what we call translation of research with dogs into findings that might benefit people. As a veterinarian, I'm actually interested in dogs because I'm interested in dogs, but I do understand the potential of learning about dogs to benefit people. So a few things that we expect to be important and related between dogs and people, we do expect that dietary and exercise related factors are likely to translate. So things about, as you already mentioned, obesity and the consequences of obesity, the nature of exercise or consistency of exercise we expect will translate. Also, dogs literally breathe our air, drink our water, and sleep in our beds. And so we expect that environmental, meaning physical, geospatial, environmental consequences will translate. So dogs who might be exposed, for instance, to pollutants in the air or pollutants in the water, the people living in their houses, unfortunately, are exposed to the same things. And so we do expect that those will translate from dogs to people. One of the interesting differences between dogs and people is that people, especially in this country, we're familiar with this in aging people, have a lot of coronary artery disease. So heart disease that's a result of diseases of the blood vessels or atherosclerosis. And interestingly, that is an extremely, extremely rare thing in dogs. That almost never happens in dogs. And when dogs have coronary artery disease or vascular disease, it is almost always because they have another severe underlying metabolic disorder. Mm-hmm. And so nobody really understands why that is. Why is it that humans are so subject to this very important and particular problem of their hearts, and dogs, who, again, are literally eating from our tables, are not subject to this same problem? So even in places where dogs' long-term health consequences are different from people, I think it creates opportunities for us to understand, why is that so? And is there anything we can do to support people to make their hearts function a little bit more like dogs?
Absolutely, yes. I think that is such an interesting finding, looking at how environment plays a role in the likeliness of getting certain diseases and comparing it between humans and dogs. I'm really excited to see what you can find out with your research. And so for my last question, I just wanted to ask you if there is anything else you would like more people to know about your research and the Dog Aging Project in general.
One of the things that, again, I want to emphasize about our project is that it is community science. And it's really important to us that we are studying dogs in their homes because we think that's where the best data will come from. But also, we are just delighted to engage with people in the scientific process. I think science and understanding science is so important for everybody in this country, not just science about dogs, but science about everything. And it is our hope that by engaging people in this community science project with their dogs will break down some barriers and demystify some things about science that sometimes seem very foreign or potentially intimidating or potentially unwelcoming. And I hope that people who participate in our project will find it a really rewarding and welcoming experience to be a part of science.
That is so great that you mentioned that, because that is exactly what we are trying to do with the science influencers, is an attempt to bridge a gap between science and people. So it is so great that you have been so personable, and I thank you so much for being part of this project.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm delighted that you chose our project to look at. So thank you very much for the attention that you're applying to the Dog Aging Project.
All right, guys, that is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, this is the largest canine health study in the world. And if you're interested in joining, please check them out on their website at dogagingproject.org. Thank you all so much, and until next time.